Welcome back to Binge Tested, a Ghostbusters podcast. I'm your host, Charlie Harsh, and this is the show where we break down the builds, the gear, and how to actually make this stuff better. Today's episode is a good one because we're talking to someone who sits right in that space between fan builds and real-world function. I'm joined by Sean Charlesworth, known for his work with Tested alongside Adam Savage, but more importantly, for the level of detail and functionality that he brings into everything he builds, from ghost traps used in real events like the Murray Bros Caddyshack tournament, to helping on Adam's Afterlife Proton Pack build with Ben Eady, to full scale builds like the RTV, the Keymaster helmet, and even the ESP shock machine. Sean's work isn't just about how things look, it's how they work. Right, so that's what I want to get into right now. Sean, welcome to Binge Tested.
Thanks, Grant. Glad to be here.
Yeah, man, it's so exciting to have you on and just talk about Ghostbusters and stuff, because you've been a fan of Ghostbusters for a long time, right?
I actually saw it in the theaters. I'm older than most people think. I actually was 12 when it came out.
Oh, so. Wow. See, I would have thought, okay, maybe he was born when it came out.
I've aged well, I guess, but I saw it. I, as a kid, I was really, really into supernatural stuff, and so that was right in my area of interest.
Yeah,
was super excited to see it, and I think I probably saw it probably three times in the theater, I think. And wow. Yeah, it's always been a favorite.
Yeah, no, for sure. What about GB2? Did you do the same with that one?
Yeah, yeah. And I know GB2 gets a bad rep, but like, there's still a lot of good stuff in it, and I enjoyed it. Not as much as the first one, but it's still great.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it is. You got to keep with the classics, so you know, just you can't throw it all out, right? Now, you built a reputation for highly detailed functional props. You know what originally pulled you into prop building, and when did Ghostbuster specifically enter that picture for you regarding that?
I've always liked tinkering and building stuff and projects. Funny enough, though, I didn't actually start hardcore like building props until probably like 2012. So like much later, and like I did some messing around as a kid, like mainly like model kits and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but I didn't really, really start building stuff and honing my skills until like 2012 when I built a Stormtrooper blaster.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was for the dumbest reason. I worked for years. I worked at NYU in the film and TV program. I was their repair tech.
Oh, okay.
And you get to the end of the semester and you have so much budget money left. And it's one of those things where you have 3 days to spend X amount of dollars or we're going to lose it.
Yeah.
So I got on McMaster car website and I ordered a milling machine.
Oh, my God.
and it was like a simple, like all manual, very simple machine. But still, that was a big purchase. And so I had never used a milling machine. It was just like, that'd be a good tool to have.
Yeah.
And we had the money. So I had to set a project. So I decided to do a Stormtrooper blaster. And that's kind of how I taught myself how to use the mill poorly.
Dude, that, but still, man, yeah. That's, I couldn't even do that.
And then around the same time I was going to grad school originally for computer animation, but so this is like 2012, like grad school. And my professor did a one-off class in this new thing called 3D printing.
Yeah.
And I took it and it absolutely like, it was like, what? This is like magic. And so I convinced them to let me do a 3D printing thesis. And then I just kind of continued from there, like 3D printing was my main thing. And then I started doing work with Tested. So Adam Savage from Mythbusters started up. Well, he didn't actually start it. It was started by Norman Shan and his friend Will originally, and it was a tech site. And then Jamie and Adam got brought on, and Jamie only stuck around for a few episodes, and then Adam, and then it kind of became Adam's thing. It grew into that.
Yeah.
And Adam is, if people aren't familiar with him outside of MythBusters, he's super into props and prop building and collecting and that kind of stuff. And so I started working with them doing articles and videos and stuff. And in 2016, we got a sponsorship from Dremel, and it was they had just released their first 3D printer. And so the sponsorship, they wanted me to build something using their 3D printer. And so it was just like wide open. So I don't even remember how I landed on Ghost Trap, but I'd always wanted a Ghost Trap.
Yeah.
At 2016, there really weren't any out there, that you could buy or anything. Each pretty much had to make one. And most people were building proton packs.
Yeah.
And which I love. I love proton packs, but I tend to like the smaller, like, hand props. So I wanted to do a Ghost Trap, and then it evolved from like, well, what if I not only 3D print it, but like we make it work? And I'm a novice at electronics, but my friend Jeremy Williams, who also worked with Tested, is really good with electronics. So I recruited Jeremy to design the electronic aspect. So I basically had to give him a breakdown of like what I wanted it to do. So I wanted it to, you know, light up, sounds, open and close, and ideally I wanted it to smoke. So it was like it's the whole laundry list of all the things that you want on
a everything Ghost Trap. A trap should do, right?
Yeah. And so that was like where all the Ghostbuster stuff started. So what happened was I actually designed it to be completely 3D printable except for like the hardware, like nuts and bolts stuff. So I modeled everything. So, and I tried to model it as close to the real world stuff as possible. So like I got the resistor on the side and the vector plate, and I either took measurements and replicated it directly, or sometimes you get lucky and you can find like for the vector plate that's on the side of the trap, you know, it's that fin kind of heat sink looking thing.
Right.
They actually had their blueprint prints online with the side profile. So that you can literally take that into your CAD or whatever and trace over top of it. So I did that and released the files for free, and it had like, I made a basic assembly guide and like a hardware list, because there's a lot of nuts and bolts, even if you're 3D printing everything. And I just started getting all of these emails like, where can I get this? I can't find this. And then I realized was that all of that, those nuts and bolts, if you go to like Home Depot or your local hardware place, are going to be really hard to find.
Yeah.
A lot of them aren't super common. So I was like, well, I could put together some hardware kits to sell people, and that started taking off, and that kind of, it just kind of kept going from there and grew into a Ghostbuster store.
Yeah, but
which I never set out to do or never expected. It just kind of happened.
Yeah, but that's the coolest thing though, right? I mean, you see what it was going to be, and then you see what it became, and then that's something that you kind of always loved, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's fun. Now, the vector plate on it, is that a real world piece, or is that?
Yes,
it is.
Yeah. It actually is called vector plate. From Vector Electronics, I think. And what they are is actually they're framing parts to make your own, enclosures for electronics. So like, think of like a rack mounted computer and electronic system.
Oh, okay.
So the vector plates are actually the grooves in them are meant to like accommodate like PC cards that are slid into them, and the little ends are like where you would slide it together and secure it to other plates to make like a box or something like that.
Oh.
So it comes like, typically when you buy it, like when I buy like big plates, and I cut them down to the smaller size, so it'll come in like 3 foot lengths.
Oh wow!
And they amazingly still make it. It's almost always a special order, and there's usually a minimum order quantity, but that is one thing that you can still get a hold of.
That's insane. Yeah, I didn't know that was a real piece. I thought it was something that they kind of machine. But I guess I should have known that, because when you think about how everything was kind of cobbled together, wasn't a lot of that back in the day, especially in 84. I hear it was done from like Apex, a surplus store for airplane parts.
Yeah, a lot of stuff probably came from Apex. Apex, and there's a few other like quote unquote junk stores down in the LA Burbank area. Uh-huh. And yeah, Apex is where they got all the stuff for Star Wars and stuff like that. And it's just, yeah, a big graveyard of like cool stuff. And that's where you run into the problem. You know, they found some abandoned aviation, you know, control panel, and they took all the cool knobs off of it.
Yeah.
And now us poor suckers, you know,
we're stuck
decades later, are like, oh, that was only made for the B-952 plane that was made for 2 years, and that, you know, you're good luck finding that.
Yeah, it's so true. Now, and that was kind of my question too, with the infamous cable for the GB1 pack. Was that pulled from there too? Is that the speculation on that, or was that specifically made?
I think that that is still. I think that's one of the biggest, as far as I know, I think it's still an unsolved mystery in the community. And a lot of there, I have seen people say that they felt that they made it from scratch, but I do not think so, because you would not go through that effort. You need, when you're working on movie props, it needs to be fast and done and like get it out the door.
Yeah.
And so I do think that it was a found part, but I don't think that found part has been found. So it could have been a custom wire, like cable assembly that was done for some airplane or something like that.
Yeah.
But I think that I absolutely love that there are people out there making replicas of it.
Yeah. And it gets smaller and smaller by the week, it seems, you know. Just the people who do it are so, but that's the thing, when I looked into it, they're not just, you don't just slap them together, like they're not easy to make.
No, because you got to laminate them.
Yeah,
all the spacing has to be correct, it has to have the right wires inside. Like, I don't even having been a person who finds stuff, I don't even want to think of the effort that went into that.
I know. Yeah, no, I don't either. Like, I'm just looking at my pack right now and looking at the cable and just thinking about how difficult, because I've seen people make the jigs, right, that are long. It's almost kind of like you're making guitar strings or putting guitar strings on. You got to tighten up the cables, and then they're spaced apart. Maybe they have like wood at each end that has the, so yeah, it's a whole process. But you know, but that takes me into my next question, is like, when you approach Ghostbusters props, are you thinking like a fan or more like an engineer first? How does that work?
Oh geez, that's I would say I'm approaching it as a fan on almost anything, because anything that I end up building is something that is like, ooh, that'd be really cool to have. and that, you know, that's definitely how the ghost trap started. I always had wanted a ghost trap. So I had the opportunity to make one. So definitely starting from the fan, and then immediately leads into the engineer part, because the problem you run into with a lot of the props is, in the films, a lot of things are purpose built. So there would be an opening trap, a smoking trap, a lightweight trap, a rubber trap, like it, and this is true for a lot of movie props, like that there might be multiple versions, all do a very specific thing, all are meant to be seen at a certain angle, you know, like that kind of thing. And so the challenge you run into with the ghost trap is, how do you cram all of that stuff into one unit?
Dude, yeah.
And make it, you know, fit it all in and make it look right and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, the fan thing leads very quickly into the engineering aspect. And the fan thing definitely you know, informs the engineering thing, because as the fan, you're like, oh, I want to do this and this and this and this. And then as the engineer, you're like, oh, what did I do to myself?
Yeah.
Like, so yeah, it's for, at least for me, it's definitely a mix of both. And like, there are some times when like, there might be some kind of prop that I want or something, and I'll start thinking about it in engineering terms of like, oh, that's going to really suck to make. And there are times that I'll be like, you know what? I only have so much time, and I'm sure somebody else has already made this and probably made it better than I could. So I'll just kind of do a little search for that first.
Yeah, no, yeah, for sure. So, for sure.
Now, like if it's something I just want for myself.
Now you've had experience seeing the actual props in person, right?
Yes, I did get to see the props that I've handled and seen in person. I have handled a GB2 stunt trap.
Okay.
And the Phoebe pack, because Adam did a build with Ben Eady, who is one of the special effects guys on, yeah, Afterlife. He came down the hoy from Canada to San Francisco to help Adam on an Afterlife pack build. And they did at one point bring in a Phoebe pack.
Wow, that's incredible. So now seeing the trap, right? Was the stunt trap, did that have all the electronics in it, or how was that one?
The stunt trap from the GB2 stunt trap was literally like as stunt trap as you can get, which it was pretty much made of rubber.
Oh, okay.
So it was like they took a whole trap, cast it, and then molded it, and then cast it in like a semi-rigid rubber, and then painted it all up.
Gotcha.
It's still, you know what, for as old as it was and being a stunt trap, it still looked pretty awesome. That was Sean Bishop, who's pretty big in the Ghostbusters community, had that and was kind enough to, he let me compare mine to his to see how close I got. And I also, while we're talking about Sean, I have to give props to Sean, because when I went to build my trap, there was not a lot of info out there at the time. So there was, but Sean had written like a 25 page illustrated guide on how to build your own ghost trap. But it was more geared towards like using wood and metal and like, you know, putting it on the bandsaw and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, wow.
So I use that as like a starting point to be like, okay, what are all the parts that need to be on it? And I got some dimensions from that. But then I did a hybrid because the GB1 trap's bigger than the 2. But if you look at the 2, like any of the times it's on screen, it actually looks really crappy.
Yeah.
I liked elements on the 1, but I wanted it to be a little smaller and manageable. So I did like more like GB2 size, but with GB1 features.
Gotcha.
But I was able to compare it to Sean's, and it lined up pretty good.
See, that's the thing is like, yeah, when you look at the sizes of them, like what's the big, how much of a difference is it though?
I off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you the exact measurements, yep, but the 1 is definitely longer. I think it's about the same width, but it's longer and a little beefier. And the GB2 is just a little bit smaller. And I think that from what I heard, I don't know if this is true, but I heard it was because they complained about the weight and the size and it was awkward, and so they made it a little smaller for GB2 is what I always heard.
Right.
I like this. I'm pretty happy with the sizing of my trap. And that's a good example. Like some people get really annoyed at me because I'd made a hybrid and not like an exact one or another. So
see, that's the thing about this community. And I think it goes for Star Wars as well. Anything that has diehard fans behind it, you're going to get some of that pushback because they're so dead set on, oh, this has got to be screen accurate. If it's not screened, then we're screwed. And
I understand where that comes from. I get it. I do like things to look right as well, but like I I'm more of, well, here's the thing. If you want to do completely screen accurate, the problem with that is if you get up close to some of these props, especially like older props, like Ghostbusters era stuff, they look crappy.
Yeah.
and that's not necessarily like a lot of the ghost traps look pretty darn good up close, but I'm just kind of, I'm generalizing. I'm not specifically saying Ghostbusters, but
yeah,
but there, a lot of them, they put the amount of detail that is needed for the film. And that's it, because it's time is money thing.
Right.
I'm more of an idealized prop person. I know Adam kind of follows this philosophy too. It's like, if it feels and looks right to you, then it's good.
Yeah.
I do spend a lot of time researching things, and I do make the effort to make things as close as possible, because I do like things to be accurate. But I'm also okay with cheating a bit, especially if it's gonna benefit the build. And I'm also a fan, especially in Ghostbusters, of putting your own spin on it, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, that's fun. Like, making a slavish replica is really cool. It's very satisfying. It's a great end product. But also then, like, adding your own stuff to it, then you get into your own creative stuff, and that's just a lot of fun. So yeah. I do really enjoy seeing the builds that are like, this is my take on the Proton Pack. It's still a Proton Pack, and, you know, and it's still awesome. And, like, look at all the look at the props through the span of the movie. They're, like, every single pack is different from, you know, every single trap is a little different. It's, and it's, I think it's very much in the spirit of Ghostbusters.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's the thing, is people will go to great lengths to make sure, that's a Zeddemore pack. We got to, it has this little notch right here. And if you look closely, you'll see, there's a bang right here. And they really get into that. But I think what Adam did with his pack when he, was when they were remaking, when you helped and Ben Eady and all those guys were on it, it was so, like, okay, for example, what he did with the ion arm, making it look like an antenna, right?
That
was so different, but so cool. And I think that people really underestimate what you can do with it. You don't have to keep it, you know, straight to the screen. I mean, if you do, that's cool, but make it your own, right? That's the cool part about Ghostbusters is it was, you're right, it was so different between packs.
Yeah, and I think, and this is true, like you said, on any fandom, don't get down on people for, like, their pack isn't as great as yours, and, like, you know, and they don't, may not have the time, money, or skill set to get it to the level that you're at.
Yep.
Just be kind and don't be a jerk.
Yeah, no, 100%. I agree with that completely. And I do. I think people need to, you know, calm down just a little bit. It's okay, you know. Who is it? Matt Baker, for example. Amazing job on his pack, but he absolutely loves the green and pink scheme. And that is what he did with his pack and with his uniform and stuff. Like, that kind of stuff is just so cool to see, you know, like, you can really make it your own. And that's, you're right, that's in the spirit of Ghostbusters. So it is,
it's absolutely really, and I, like I said, I like seeing all the different ones, and look at it, it's you know, the logical progression of Ghostbusters, like, you know, they started some franchise, and these are just franchise packs from different, you know,
they're from
different headquarters across the United States or whatever.
Yeah. See, and that's right. And that's, there's so many these days, right?
Yeah.
Like, I love the website whoyougonnacall.org. Like, it just lists all these different franchises around the country. And, yeah, you know, you got different ones. So that's really neat to see that people do take that into spirit and make it their own. I wanted to ask you, in your opinion, what is the difference between a prop that just looks accurate, like we were talking about, and one that actually feels real?
It obviously the weight, but like the how does it feel in your hand? Like a good example is my 3D printed ghost trap. You can completely 3D print it, but But when you pick it up, I mean, it's very lightweight, and it's like, it looks really good, but like, you know, but that's what you want on your belt if you're tromping through a con all day.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So I do have, it's weird. I really do like things functioning and doing things and like, you know, moving parts and stuff like that, which always adds to the weight. So that automatically kind of gives it a bit of heft to it, you know, and makes it feel like have that nice hand feel. And so anytime I think you start to make something that's going to be a functional thing, I think you automatically just, that's kind of built in almost.
Yeah.
Now the flip side of that is, like, oh, who were you talking? Who has the, one of your other episodes that had an all metal pack?
Matt Baker. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that there are people who do that.
Dude.
I think it's great. I love that there's all metal throwers and everything, but like, like that, like just his story of waiting in line, like, oh my God, I just couldn't do it.
I know. So, I couldn't either.
I've been working on a newer version of my trap that uses a combination of laser cut acrylic and 3D printed parts, and it makes it heftier, like a good bit heftier.
Yeah.
So I love how it feels, and it does it, and it makes for a really nice finish and nice assemble. But I don't know if I'd want that to be with the one on my belt.
See, and that's the thing. Like when I tried right now I've actually got your trap that I have. It's on my display wall right below my pack. And I was putting the electronics in it, and I was just trying to play with it, just trying to see. And I was like, okay, what if I was going to carry this on my belt? How bad would it be? Now, once you put all that stuff in there, my belt was hefty. Lopsided. Yeah, no, for sure. Like, I mean, it was crazy. And then I got to thinking, I was like, how did they do that in the movies? Because Ray's belt looks perfect when he's carrying that trap. Then I found out it was rubber.
Trap. Yeah, it was a rubber trap. Movie magic. And then you also run into the when you go through the effort of making a working trap, it's like, oh, do I really want to carry this all around? What if something happens to it? What if it falls off my belt? What
I know. Like, it's true.
So, I will. It's a tough decision.
It is because.
But I think. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, when you're right, when you're at the cons, right, and thank God they've got those cosplay repair stations there at most of them anyway, because I wouldn't know what to do if that were to happen. Like, that would freak me out.
And Murphy's Law, no matter how bulletproof you think, something's going to go wrong.
Exactly.
But here, the nice thing is, though, you can make that lightweight track or lightweight, or I'm putting in quotes, lightweight pack.
air quotes.
Yeah. And you can still make them look awesome.
Yeah.
And that's where you get into like painting and weathering and all that kind of stuff. And you can still make them look great and still be a reasonable prop to, you know, haul around and be durable.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was one of the perfect example of that is what they did in, you know, people are all about screen accuracy, at least a lot of people are. When you look at what they did in Ghostbusters Afterlife for the traps in the dirt, right? Those were, I think, all the Walmart traps, right?
It was tons of the Spirit Halloween traps.
Yep. Yeah, see? I mean, it just that kind of stuff. Like, you would never be able to tell on film that those were... You know, they had the plastic seam in the middle. That's easy to fix. And again, it's a great prop to carry around because it is lightweight, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, that kind of stuff is fun. And that's one thing that I thought was really funny that Ben Eady mentioned was when I was talking to him, he said, you know, the amount of stuff that's held together by spit, glue, and a prayer.
Oh God.
on screen. You would be amazed. And I'm sure you probably seen some of that stuff up close before with props.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I think I think things are a little different than, say, the Ghostbuster era, because now with 3D printing and being able to rapidly crank things out, and the fact that, like, we're shooting things to be on, like the, you know, the Mando movie coming out shot for IMAX, the problem is you do have to put a lot more detail in this stuff, because you will notice if it doesn't look great. So I think a lot of props that you get to see, like screen use props, there's a lot more detail in them now. But I think that's probably because of necessity, and because we have more rapid ways to do things or to iterate, so you can kind of get away with that. Versus, you know, you didn't need to have quite as much detail, and it was harder to iterate, you know, Ghostbusters era.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's the thing, is that you've built so many different things. And one of those things, again, talk about the Ghost Trap, is that you built for the Murray Brothers Caddyshack tournament. When you're building something that's going to be handled in a live event like that, how does your approach change compared to a display piece?
For some background, Bill and his brothers, he's got like seven brothers or something like that.
Oh my God.
They hold an annual Caddyshack charity golf tournament. And each year they try to come up with a Bill Murray related item to replicate and auction off for charity.
Oh,
so,
cool.
So like they did like Kingpin bowling balls one year, and stuff like that. So they contacted me to build traps, and we decided it was best to do just static traps. So these had no electronics or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I built them pretty much how I would normally. So I basically kind of designed the trap with two options. The standard trap, which is completely 3D printed, as much 3D printed stuff as possible. So you just pretty much need the screws to put it together.
Yeah.
And then, but I'm because I modeled all the things on the real world things, you can also start to swap out as many real parts as you want. So basically, I was building my 3D printed traps, but with all the real world hardware on it. So like the vector plate and the resistor and the toggle switch and, you know, the all that stuff. And the one big change that I did make for speed was any big flat surfaces like the side or the bottom, it actually doesn't make a lot of sense to 3D print that, because it's just a big slab. And it's a basic shape. And so I started doing those out of a laser cut acrylic, which I could do in a fraction of the time as 3D printing it. Because I think I made six or seven traps.
Oh, wow.
I did do that modification. But other than that, it was my standard 3D printed trap. Like I would, you know, anybody who was building my kit, it was pretty much the same thing.
Gotcha.
And once again, mine is not 100% screen accurate, by any means, but they were happy with it. Bill was happy with it enough that he actually had me build four more for, I think he was giving them away to friends.
Oh, cool.
So they were happy with them. So if Bill Murray's happy with the trap, then I'm happy.
Cause he's one of the pickiest people from what I hear, you know, so that's cool.
Those were just built the same way. I gave them the option of do they want them like shiny new off the production floor, or did they want them, you know, grimed up? And I suggested grimed up because that's more in universe,
right,
for Ghostbusters. Also, if you screw up, it's easier to hide mistakes.
That's true.
I'm terrible. I think part of the reason I am attracted to Star Wars and Ghostbusters is everything's grimy and beat up.
Yeah, yeah.
it, I'm terrible at making nice shiny props.
Yeah, well, that was the cool thing about when they introduced the Frozen Empire packs is that even those kind of had a little grimy look to them, you know?
So, yeah, that's half the fun.
Exactly, yeah. Weathering it up and making it look good is so much fun because, yeah, you're right. And that's, again, going back to what Ben Eady was talking about, because I mentioned to him that I was building another 3D printed pack. I wanted kind of a wall piece. And yeah. I have it connected to a smart switch, so that way all the lights and stuff turn on. And I told him, I said, I think I got some of the Vallejo pigment powder.
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, I think I might have overdone it just a little bit. It looks like it might have been dragged through the dirt farm. And he goes, you know what? That's totally fine because you will never, ever forget that you put that much more effort into something like that. And I was like, you know, that's true.
And you can always pull it back. You know, you can always, you know, clean up your weathering or, you know, do a little more paint on it or whatever. It's always fixable.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Now for somebody who is building, say their first proton pack or trap, what is the biggest mistake that you see that immediately limits the build?
Oh, geez, that's a good one. You know, I would say, and I am guilty of this ever since I was a kid, especially if you're just starting, don't try the, you don't necessarily have to try to make everything absolutely perfect and like screen accurate. And like, if you try to get it perfect on your first go, you're going to drive yourself absolutely insane.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of a hypocrite saying this because like, I tend to do that and it does drive me insane. and I always get afraid of, you know, messing up or whatever, so I try to do it perfect on the first try, which is impossible. And I was always that kid that was guilty of like, I'm gonna build, you know, models, and I'm gonna get Fine Scale Modeler magazine, and I'm gonna follow every tutorial that's in that and make the most perfect model ever on the first try. And then I was always horribly disappointed in myself.
Yeah.
Because that,
I've been there.
That just doesn't happen. So you know, like, don't be afraid to, you know, rather than dive in and try to make the perfect thing right away, don't be afraid to start small. You know, like maybe buy a Spirit Halloween trap and kind of mess around with that. You know, it wasn't too expensive. It gives you a good starting point, you know, like that kind of thing. And I think that's my main thing is like, don't try to get in. I don't want to say get in over your head, but, you know, set your expectations and be reasonable about it. And, you know, look around and in the internet age and with everybody doing this stuff, there's so many resources out there now, to do this stuff and figure it out. So do your research a little bit and look around, like make sure you're not reinventing the wheel.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. Now, well, and we were talking about too, you know, going to cons and, you know, maybe being worried about things breaking or something like that. If you have a trap on your belt, how do you balance the durability versus accuracy aspect of that, especially for something that's, you know, going to be worn or transported or used repeatedly, especially at a con where everybody's bumping into everybody?
Jeez. Yeah. That's another good question. And that is something when I'm doing my design process of like, how does the engineering part, like how does this all go together? That is something that is always in my mind. And I'm not necessarily thinking about it in terms of like going to a con or anything like that, but like just basically like, how do I make sure this is nice and solid, you know?
Yeah.
And so for me, that the way I tackle that, it just is part of the design process. So like, sometimes there's like the easy way to do something, and then I'm like, That would be so much easier, but it's not going to hold up, or that's going to break, or that's going to be hard to fix, or, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Right.
And so I will think about that a lot when I'm designing stuff. So it kind of, for at least me, it kind of automatically gets, you know, part of the design process. Now, and with the rise of 3D printing and so many people doing 3D printing, you should think a little bit about what you're going to print in. And I've seen, like, you know, like horror stories of people printing in like really cheap PLA filament.
Oh, yeah.
And just it literally crumbling years later. And so if you're going to put a lot of time and effort into, like, say making a proton pack, like the Q pack or something like that.
Yeah.
I would invest a little bit of extra effort into picking your materials. So, like, you know, like, a reputable filament brand, maybe a tough PLA or, you know, something like that, that's going to be a little bit more durable, last a little bit longer, not going to disintegrate on you.
Yeah.
or shatter when it just gets bumped.
Yeah.
You run into that problem a lot with, like, the resin parts, the resin printed parts, that if you get the wrong resin, it'll just shatter like glass if you drop it, you know?
Yeah.
So I think material choice is something to think about, and whether that material choice is, like, is this rubbery and friendly? Is this, you know, is this, you know, the right filament? Is this the if you're casting stuff, is it the right resin? Like a little bit of material research and material science is good to look into. And then I think also, doing your paint right, like prepping, like, now you can get a little sloppy with Ghostbusters because if you want it to wear naturally, you can be a little sloppy with your paint, so it does kind of scratch off, you know.
Yeah.
Or stuff like that to naturally wear. But, you know, like sanding things, priming things, making sure it's not too hot or cold when you paint, stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really getting into the weeds, especially when you think about, you know, like, how detailed do you want to go with it? And that's one thing that I noticed with, say, the 89 pack, for example, that I have on my wall, is this one I did, and it kind of pisses me off a little bit because I did this one so much better than I did my first one. But again, it's like we were talking about, my first one was literally, the first one. You're not going to do it right on your first pass, more than likely. And so that was the case for me. But I went through, I taped everything off. I got, it was the, some sheetrock splatter stuff that you put on the wall, some wall splatter.
And that's
what I used to texture, because I think that kind of gave it that, you know, that look.
Yeah.
And then I used the Canyon Black satin spray paint on it. And everything just came out really, really good. And you're right. Yeah, you can make those mistakes and it'd be okay with in the Ghostbusters universe, especially. And with my pack, which I have the Q pack, I printed in PETG. And I think that's kind of a big recommendation for a lot of 3D printed things, especially, so, you know, if you're waiting in line to get into a con and the sun's beating down on you, you're not going to have to worry, hopefully, about your pack warping as much as you would with, like, regular PLA.
You don't want droopy pack.
Droopy pack syndrome. There might be a pill for that somewhere. I'm not sure. Yeah, no, that would be horrible. That's actually kind of been a worry of mine, because sometimes, you know, here in Utah, for example, it gets hot in the summer.
Yeah.
You know, when you're out in the desert, you know, like we are, it gets crazy. But I have worried about that.
I always include, I sell a fair amount of 3D printed parts and upgrades and stuff, and I always include a little care card with it, because I'm printing in, like, tough PLA, so it does hold up to heat a little bit better and everything, but like, don't leave this in your car in the middle of summer, like, you know.
You'll have a bad, you know, it'll bring you back to the days of when we had CD cases in your car, and you got to put it in, and then it's all warped, and everything's horrible. Now, you've worked on, you know, a bunch of mechanical builds. One of the things that I saw you build was the RTV for Adam.
Yeah.
And that was, I couldn't imagine. So it's already difficult enough to get all the electronics inside of a trap. But what you pulled off with the RTV was astounding to me. How did that come about?
That was actually another sponsored build. That the Spirits Unleashed game came out and they wanted to do a build. And so they were, I think they were kind of like asking like, well, what would you want to build? And so we decided that, so we had done the ghost trap, both Adam and I wanted RTV. So like, let's do the RTV. And, part of that was then, you know, if you played the Spirits Unleashed game at all, you can do like mods to all the equipment.
Yeah.
So they wanted to do like an in-game, one of their in-game mods. So they sent me a bunch of reference for like, there's like a cool bumper front thing that could go on the RTV in game. And so I built that as well as a swap out part. And luckily I had like, you know, Ben Eady who built and drove the real RTV. I'd be like, is this right? Is this right? You know? So like I was blessed. Yes. Oh my God. That thing was, there's a great picture of him out there online of the wrecked RTV. So I was blessed with having access to the real stuff and the real, people who worked on it to get a lot of help. We did have a decision. So there were some decisions to be made. And after asking Ben's opinion and everything, that the doors weren't going to open because I asked Ben about that and he said they're basically spring loaded and they would just kind of, there's a pin that would release them and pop them open. So we decided to not do the opening doors because that was going to, especially with the time limit we had, mm-hmm. we decided to not do that.
Yeah.
And then, there was apparently, Ben told me that there was two super expensive high torque servos, one in the front, one in the back. And if you can find good enough screenshots of the RTV, there's actually cables that ran out and attached to the wishbone arms on the suspension. And these servos, what they would do is they controlled the profile of the RTV. So like if it squatted down to like shoot under the car or under something, these super high torque servos would pull these cables and pull the suspension down. And we decided not to do that because it was going to be really complicated and really expensive. So we had to make some choices there. So we decided that, you know, just looking right and being remote control with the same parts I used in the film, same RC chassis, and we decided we'd make the lights work.
Yeah.
And then it was just, I haven't done RC stuff since I was a kid, so I had a bit of a learning curve there, and I was on a lot of RC forums asking questions, and took me a while to figure out what the right chassis, or it was a Traxxas RC kit, and figuring out like what the right one for that was. It's like it was a lot of work.
Yeah.
But I was really happy with how it turned out. And now, very much like, I think a lot of the driving ones, the bodies were made out of like a rubber, like a hard rubber. Yeah. And mine was a 3D printed resin, but it was a really tough, like ABS like resin, but it's, it's still, you know, pretty delicate. And this thing can, and I scaled down and I put a pretty, like a, not a crazy motor in it. And I didn't put a super huge battery in it. So like it would go fast, but not like as fast as what was in the film. And as soon as I gave it to Adam, I was like, all right, just be careful with this because if it's not built to like handle a lot of abuse, and I think within 5 minutes he ran it into a brick wall.
Yeah.
And it just shattered the front end. Because the problem with the RTV is if you build it just like the film,
yeah,
the headlights, the flashlights that are on top stick out beyond the bumper. So that's the first thing that just gets absolutely smashed.
Oh, wow. I didn't know they were sticking out that far. It looks like it just is a little bit.
Yeah, they do. So it was a fun build and I'm really happy with it. And that's a funny case where like I wanted it to work. Because that's just cool, But honestly, it usually is just sitting on the shelf as a really cool display piece. I'm too afraid to drive it most of the time.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's the thing is I was talking to Ben about that, and I told him, I said, you know, one of the things that Mark with Scavenger Workshop, you know, he's working on the aluminum trap, and he came up with the idea. He's like, what if we put this aluminum trap on an RC car and made the RTV? And I was like,
oh my God,
what?
You could kill somebody.
Yeah, that's exactly what Ben said. He goes, dude, you do that, that's a bullet, right? I mean, you get that thing going down the road.
When I was filming demoing the finished trap, and I'm driving around the parking lot of our apartment building, I had my wife filming, and I rammed her in the ankle with it.
Oh no.
I took her out. She was not happy. But yeah, and that was the quote-unquote lightweight one made out of plastic.
Oh my gosh, dude. Yeah, I couldn't imagine what an all-metal, not to mention the fact of how expensive that would be. Because I bet you'd probably have to have those expensive servos that they were talking about that they used in the movie.
Oh my God, yeah. That would be just one of those fun, ridiculous builds.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and probably safer to be a display piece with some wheels. I think would probably be the better piece for it. Now, you built a ton, not just the Trask, but you built a ton of things. You built, the Keymaster helmet and the ESP shock machine? How? What made you want to get behind that? Were they functional?
So the shock... so the shock machine... obviously, you know, beginning of the first movie, and he's shocking the college kid, and I was aware of that machine. I knew it was a big wooden box, you know, like, but like I didn't know what it was. I never really thought about it too much. But my friend Jordan is like a savant with filing away prop information. And he was at a junk store, and he just stumbled across the actual thing that they used in the film, which is a Beckman pH meter. It was a portable pH measuring device. And he just happened to find one. And he's like, you want it? I'll pick it up. So I was like, sure. So, and then I just kind of did some more work on it. Because they pretty much just took the lid off and used it as is in the movie.
Yeah.
And the one challenge you run into is when you do find those, there's the version that's in the movie is an older version that there's like a needle gauge on it, and it's a round meter gauge. And most of the ones you come across are a slightly newer version that has a square gauge on it.
Yeah.
And I have found three of these so far, and all of them had the freaking square gauge on it.
Oh my.
So, like I said, I do like things to be as accurate as possible,
right,
within reason. So that the big thing I had to do on that was I spent weeks looking for the appropriate size round meter that looked right and was the right size. And it took forever to find. But I did swap out the square meter for a more appropriate round one. So it looks right, but it's not 100% accurate to the original prop. And then they added the shock pads to it. So I found some appropriate looking shock pads to add with it for display. And probably the most fun was I wanted the ESP cards. And those are actual Bicycle, who makes, you know, lots of playing cards. They were legit oversized jumbo ESP cards that they made back in the day. They don't make those anymore. They have regular playing card size ones, but you can't get the jumbo ESP cards. So I did find that they still make jumbo regular decks. So I found the right color, the right design that was used for the ESP cards. And then I drew up my own symbols and printed them on labels and then stuck them on the playing cards and trimmed around the outside. So I had to make my own ESP cards. So that's the little display. So that is totally just like a little display piece on a shelf that looks neat. I have seriously considered installing a TENS unit on it, which is, you know, one of those units they use to stimulate muscles and nerves, like for pain relief.
Yeah.
So I thought it'd be fun to install a TENS unit in it so you actually could get zapped.
You have to.
That's on my list, my never-ending list of things to do. So that was a fun one. And then I'm very proud of my ghost trap, but I have a soft spot for builds that aren't typically done. And I got it in my head. I wanted to do I call it the Keymaster helmet, but you know, the colander with the electrodes and everything that they're scanning Vins with in the lab, figuring out that he's actually a terror dog. And so I wanted to do that build, and that was like, oh my God, I first screen grabbed as many shots as I could from the film and looked at them for weeks and weeks and weeks trying to figure out what was on it. 'Cause on that particular prop, you never see the back, I think it's the back left side really well. You just never see it. And so, the first thing I had to do is figure out the right colander, which is a metal colander, and there's a whole ton of them. So you got to get the right size because they made different diameter ones, and they have this star pattern that's punched into them. The straining pattern are actually like in the shape of stars.
Okay.
And what I quickly found out was, like, I took detailed notes on like the positioning of all the electrodes on it, and where I think that they stuck it on the star pattern, like to try so I'm like literally counting holes on the star patterns, like to lay out my screw patterns, you know? And, and what I figured out after buying multiple colanders is that I don't know how the factory worked, but the stars are kind of stamped willy nilly. Like there's always the same amount of stars, but they're all slightly different orientations. So finding the right colander, the right size that had the right orientation to match the Ghostbusters one was a giant pain in the ass.
I bet. Yeah. And that's the thing, because there's so many different pieces on that helmet.
Yeah. So there's like, oh my God, there's so many screws that you have to put in on that. Because there's like, There's resistors on it, similar to the ones they used on the packs. There's some that are like the ones on the trap. There are all these like little ceramic electrode insulator things on them. There's terminals, tons of wire. So then I was like finding the right wire color, and then I had to figure out how to coil it because a lot of them are like curly-cued. I spent way too much time on that, but it turned out great. I loved it. And I think it's one of my favorite things that I've built.
Is that next to the shock machine?
Oh yeah. Shelf? Yeah. Yeah. And what I need to do, my next step on that is I buy a lot of stuff from Adafruit Electronics. They make great stuff. I'm an electronics novice. Like I can kind of like, oh, if I get this board and this board, I think I can make it do this, but I can't create electronics from design from scratch.
Yeah.
So I found out they have this little board that has a accelerometer and gyro unit on it, I think. And what it will let you do is as the board turns and moves, it will drive a 3D model on like your computer or phone or something. And so I want to install that in the helmet so you can do the Zool. Like, so, or not Zool, Vins. So you can do the demon dog head. But I need help with that. So I've recruited my electronics friends to help me out with it. And then we need to get either a good Terror Dog head model or scan like a toy or something so we can have a 3D model that drives it. But that's the ultimate goal, to have like that set up on your phone so that you can
just go you can around wear the, and put it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you can wear the helmet and then have the scan showing up too. I think that'd be hilarious.
That would be the coolest thing though. Like,
I know.
You could take that to a con and maybe have a booth and just like, if you're a Ghostbusters franchise, you're out at the con, people come up. That would be the coolest thing.
And that was just one of those things that was like, oh, it'd be so cool if it could do that. and then that's like, well, somebody's probably figured that out. And then I just started looking, and then, oh, there's Adafruit that I buy lots of stuff from. The whole thing that you need already exists.
That's neat.
I just need a little bit of help implementing it. So at some point that'll get done.
You know, one of the things, and I was going to ask you about this with electronics, is I have found that AI has been able to help me design a PCB.
Oh, yeah.
In KiCad. I've bought it from PCBWay. I got it, and I was hoping. I was like, oh, my God, please work. Just work it flawlessly. And
that's amazing.
And
that is crazy.
Just to be able to do that, because that's really helped with Ghostbusters props and stuff like that. Like my Bell Gizmo, for example. You know, I wanted to, you know, kind of, again, my own take on it. But yeah, I did that. I made it to where it talks to my GP Star electronics in the pack wirelessly. And I wouldn't have been able to do that without AI. And so is that anything that you've ever thought about implementing in your builds, or maybe in the future, or something?
God,
as a tool?
I never even thought about that. Despite working in 3D and 3D printing and all that, I'm a little bit of an old fart, and I'm not like AI, but like it just
it's just not first thing on the list. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not part of my tool brain. I've actually hardly used it at all. The only thing I've used it for was another ridiculous build where they made this amazing, Beetlejuice diorama.
Oh,
it's the Dante's Inferno room.
Yes.
Diorama. And so I've been making upgrades for that. And one of the things that is in the film, is when he's on the second level there, there's curtains. There's these funky curtains that are hanging in the windows there. And on the set, the toy, it's just these cardboard cutouts. I'm like, and so part of my ridiculous upgrades was like, oh, it'd be really cool to have real curtains. So I could not think of any way to do this. So this is one instance where I fed the best screen grabs I could do of that scene. And I told ChatGPT, is like, make a repeating pattern based exactly on this curtain pattern. And that's how I got them done. I printed fabric.
Dude,
from that.
I'm telling
but
you,
I had never thought about designing electronics with it. That is crazy that you can do that.
Yeah, I didn't think so either. And then I just was like, you know, let me just see how accurate this is. So I started out with a breadboard. And
yeah.
It told me, it said, okay, if you're going to do this, you need to put a thousand ohm resistor here and do the, cause I'm like you, I'm a very novice when it comes to electronics.
Yeah.
But that kind of stuff, it did it and it worked. And
amazing.
I was just like,
my God. That's awesome.
And then it would tell me, it would be like, okay, you need to look, because once you put all these things in series, your multimeter should read whatever it was. And sure enough,
and
right on. Yeah. It was so cool. But
that's like magic.
It really is, because it just kind of gives someone like myself who doesn't have that experience, who maybe wants to make a lot of this cool Ghostbuster stuff, a reality.
Opens the door. Yeah, it opens the door. And it is, we are in the golden age of prop building, because like the amount of resources out there and the amount of people that can help in the fandoms and the Discords and like and like places like Adafruit that have very user-friendly electronic stuff like that, it's awesome what you can do.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and that's it. So another thing that I did as an example was, you know, Adam came up with the attenuator. That's been huge in the community. And yeah, it's cool because it just, it fits. It doesn't really have to go anywhere in the back, but it just kind of, maybe in my case, it has a little magnet on the end and pops right onto the side of the pack.
And that's a perfect example of your own spin on things that has become a pretty big part of the community now because people loved it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so what I did was I took a little, I think it was an Adafruit, little screen, and yeah, I put it in a 3D printed, basically it is what it was. It was the attenuator shell, yeah, with the screen cut out just perfect for that size. And I put in an Arduino and I told GPT to code it and it came out and I said, okay, I want you to make the screen look very Ghostbusters centric, very 80s. And it came out and it's got the little, I don't know how it did it, but it's got the little crazy line that you would see in a CRT just going across the screen.
No way.
And it's the coolest thing, but it allows me to just kind of control it and make it look like a PKE meter, for example. It'll have like different bars going up and down. It's so interactive with a little potentiometer.
Cool.
And yeah, just so much fun, you know. So yeah, putting your own spin on it and using AI to kind of do that, I think is, man, really been helpful.
I will definitely have to investigate that more, add it to my long list of things to learn.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. And I was going to ask you too, like, you know, you talk about all the things that you're, you know, learning and doing, you know, how important is it, you know, planning like a complete internal layout when it comes to electronics versus figuring it out as you go?
I think of the, in the case of prop replicas, You gotta get the base. You have to do the externals first, just because that's the most important part, is making it look right. And then sometimes depending on the prop, like sometimes I'll be like, this is what I wanted to do. Is there anything out there that will fit in it as is? And I will keep that in mind while I'm designing it. So, like for the ghost trap, I did get the outside, like all the major stuff to make it look right in place.
Yeah.
And at that point, like the internals, it was literally just like a box, with nothing really laid out yet on the inside. And then, sometimes, like particularly like Adafruit and stuff like that, you can actually find 3D models of the board itself, or like the battery pack itself,
right.
You know, so I will stick those 3D models in start doing a layout inside of where can this fit? How do I need to do this? Where do I need a mounting bracket? Or sometimes if there's not 3D models available, I literally get out the calipers and I recreate a rough stand-in of that board or electronics piece. So I can see what will fit. And that's really important because fitting like the bar graph in the front of the trap can be kind of challenging, to fit like something that's going to hold it. And like, is this bar graph that I got too deep and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I will do that kind of stuff a lot. And like, then that will often inform how the internal structure is built, based on like, do I need to run wires here? Do I need to run tubing here? You know, stuff like that. And like one of the biggest challenges when I did the trap is that I wanted the doors to open and close. And in the movie, the original movie, they literally just had servo arms that were sticking out of the opening. You just never see them, you know, from the angles that it shot at.
Oh, wow.
And I really, really wanted it to be more like in universe where the door's open and you don't really see how, like, it's all hidden.
Yeah.
So that, for me, that would be like, well, it's got to have axles that go into the front of the trap. And like, how do you drive that? So originally my thought was, well, if you could get like a servo that had like little levers or something, it could drive it. And what I was finding is like on my particular trap in my layout, I just did not have the room or the mechanical knowledge to figure out how to do that. So I ended up having this little miniature chain drive, which is totally ridiculous, but it helped me figure out how I had to lay it out based on the what space I had available, you yeah. know. And like laying out that stuff was really helpful in 3D. But like I said, the outside had to be done first so that it looks right. And for the most part, I try to keep the external part as accurate as possible and not do any cheats. So like mine has a cheat where the top lip, on the trap has holes are all around it so that the smoke can come out. So, you know, sometimes you got to do stuff like that, but it always starts with the external, moving to the internal, and then making compromises as needed.
Yeah. Is it okay yeah. to have wires kind of going around the outside if you, like, do it nicely? Does that take away from the Ghostbusters aspect, or do you think it kind of keeps it in universe?
On the trap, I will avoid that as much as possible. Pack, I think that you're more good to go.
Gotcha. Yeah, that was going to be my biggest concern is like, you know, because especially with the trap, right, there's only so much room you got in there. So
you've run out of space very quickly. And I think the other challenging thing about the builds is figuring out order of operations, like how things go together in a logical way, and then also keeping in mind for serviceability, like one of the biggest things is like how am I going to get to the battery and the smoke juice, like the smoke reservoir to fill that. And I'm like, the obvious place was the back panel underneath the handle, but I was like, I don't want to have to unscrew that every single time to do that. That's going to be really annoying, and I'm going to end up losing a screw or whatever. So I did magnets on that. I got like really strong magnets.
Oh yeah, nice.
And so that was a design choice to make it easily accessible for, you know, like I had to think about how would I be using this, you know, on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, like thinking about the side panels and like getting access to the wiring and stuff like that. And so I tried to make things as modular as possible so you can unplug everything from the Arduino in case you have to troubleshoot or to, you know, access stuff or take things apart or, you know, stuff like that. And it's a challenge. It's like, it'll kind of drive you crazy sometimes, like going through iteration after iteration after iteration. But it's really, really satisfying when you just nail it. It's like, this is great. It just feels really good when like it all goes together nicely.
Nice. Yeah. That's one of the, it's so satisfying when that happens, you know? So looking at everything that you've built so far, what Ghostbusters project or concept is it that you would love to tackle in the future?
Oh man. That's a good one. Well, I am embarrassed to say I still need to finish my pack. I have like all the stuff for it, but I have not put it together. No, and that's how it always is. Oh God, that's how it always is. You get stuff done for everybody else except for yourself.
Except for yourself.
So I need to put together my pack. But as far as like from scratch stuff that I would like to do, I'm actually working on this. I need to do a redesign of my trap. I did that over 10 years ago now, and I've learned a lot since then, and there's a lot of things that weren't available back then, and I have friends who have, you know, more knowledge than I do now, and I want to do a complete redesign on my trap to, you know, so it has a removable cartridge, drop-in electronics, all that kind of stuff. But that's really... that's a big one. I love the Frozen Empire drone deploy from the Ecto-1.
That was the sweetest
thing. I would love to have one of those, but then that's a whole like, oh God, now I got to learn all about drones and everything. Although there's probably some good build guides out there already, but I would love just even just a display. I don't even care if it works that much, but like just on display, I think that thing looks awesome.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen people like there's 3D printing them, and they'll like put actual propellers on them, but they'll like hang it up on the wall. It's so cool.
Yeah, it's just sometimes you just need the thing to just have and look cool. I'd love to just make one of those, even just for display. I would obviously love to do a containment unit. I have a wall space issue with that. I don't know where I'd put it, but that would be good. But I think as far as like weird, like I said, I tend to like to do the more obscure things that don't get done a lot. I would love to at some point do a build of the slime collection tool that Ray uses when he's dangling above the river down, of slime. Yeah. The thing, it's like built on a fishing pole. I just love that thing.
Yeah.
I would just like one that doesn't get done a lot, which I love. That would be a really fun one to do at some point. So that's been on my list as well. But I think the top of that would be the slime scoop and a containment unit would be, and a containment unit that would somehow, that would actually interact with the trap cartridge. So an interactive unit with your cartridge, I think would just be awesome.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I saw somebody out there who made a 3D printable containment unit.
Nice.
And
nice.
I mean, just, I couldn't imagine just like taking the time and printing all that up and finding space on my wall, but
yeah,
I would love to do that.
What I would really, really love to do is not only just the containment unit, but then have a little bit of a surround replicating the cement blocks. And then like, it'd be amazing if like you hit a button and like the blocks start to like push out a little bit.
Yeah.
and then like, oh, that would be the best. And then have like some nice LED arrays behind it and a smoke machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's when like it starts to get carried away.
Hey, but that's okay though. It's Ghostbusters, right? It's all worth it.
Yeah. I would love to see that.
That would be cool. So, yeah. Especially if you put like some, WS2812B, those LEDs, and would they change and flicker and all that? Yeah, that would be...
Oh, that'd be so good.
So awesome. Man, let me tell you, Sean, I appreciate you for coming on the podcast today. It has been
a
pleasure. We've discussed everything from A to Z. What can we look forward to, and where can people find you?
Oh, geez. Just keep looking for more upgrades in my shop. I spent the last year building a ton of stuff for like the Hasbro trap, the Spirit Halloween Deluxe trap, the Fun Pack. Like I kind of actually got burnout, but after Christmas, I was burnout. But yeah, you can check out my shop. It's Charlesworth Dynamics on Etsy. The letter C, Worth Dynamics on Instagram. And I try to post stuff there as often as I can to update what I've been working on.
I love it. We'll also link to you over on bingetestedpod.com. My man, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, and we'll have to do this again. Hopefully we can get you and Ben Edie on at the same time and we can all collab.
That would be fun. I love Ben.
Awesome, man. That was Sean Charlesworth. And if there's one thing that you can take away from this conversation, it's this. Better builds don't come from chasing perfection. They come from understanding how something works and being willing to iterate until it actually does. It's easy to get stuck trying to make something look right, but the moment you start thinking about function, durability, and how all the pieces come together, that's when your builds start to level up. That's the gap. And that's what we're trying to close with this show. So if you got something out of this one, stick with it. Take one idea, apply it to your next build, and push it just a little further. I appreciate you being here, and we've got more coming on Bench Tested, a Ghostbusters podcast.